perked. Star never faded. She was like, I'm not saying a word. Proverbs chapter 3. I read an article, and we'll have the verses that we're going to look at this morning on the screen. I looked at an article, 5 most popular resolutions, right? It's that time of the year. You know, you got to make that New Year's resolution. It's important to do that. Terry said in his prayer, you know, about how sometimes we look at things and we say, oh, you know, this is a clean slate, right? We want to do something to start the new year out well. So the 5 most popular resolutions, according to this article, there were several articles. Number 5 was take up a new hobby. So, you know, everybody needs to do that, right? Number 4 was make more money. And I was assuming, like, at a job, not down in your basement, but make more money, right? You just want to create your own printing press. But if anybody does know how to do that, that would help our special contribution, right? That would be good. Number 3, improve relationships. And I think that's a pretty noble task. Number 2 was to stop smoking. And then number 1, I know you're not going to know the answer. Lose weight, right? That's always number 1. Everybody says, I'm going to eat better. I'm going to do better. Everything's going to be better in the way that I consume my food. I read the story of a lady who walks into, she's at her house, and she walks in into the bathroom, and her husband is on the scale, and he's got his stomach sucked in, and she thinks to himself, he thinks he's going to weigh less by sucking in his stomach. She thinks that's really funny. She says, honey, that's not going to help. He goes, sure it is. That's the only way I can see the numbers. she's misconceived. So, you know, it is. It's that time of the year, right? It's Christmas, right after Christmas. I mean, we get to Thanksgiving, and we think, I mean, Karen and I are on a, you know, the low-carb diet, and we get to Thanksgiving and go, eh. You know, we're going to eat what we want to eat. We're going to do what we want to do. And then you think, well, you know, it's only 3 weeks for Christmas. You know, maybe a month. We'll get back on the diet later. So it is. It's this time of the year that most people start thinking about a better diet. But New Year's is always a good time to think about hope, right? There's hope for a new year. There's hope for change. There's a hope for something fresh and something new. So that's what I want to talk about this morning, because statistics are our enemy. January 15th is an important date around New Year's. Why is January 15th an important date? Anybody want to take a guess? Because about 40 to 45% of Americans have already blown their New Year's resolution. That's kind of scary. 2 weeks from today, most people have already messed it up. You know, within the first 3 months, it's well over 50%, and it obviously balloons from there. So I thought that it would be great for us this morning to not just make a New Year's resolution for us necessarily and the way that we want to live out our life, but to look at how God has given us some wisdom within the Word, so that if I forget my New Year's resolution, because we have selective memory too, right? We have a tendency to forget, and forgetting is a bad thing. There was a, I'm sure one more story. There was an older man who was a widower. He's starting to experience a little Alzheimer's. Goes to a community center. Goes to a retirement center, and everybody loves him. I mean, they absolutely love the guy. And he meets a lady, and they really start kind of hitting it off. And she was a widow lady, but she had a little onset of Alzheimer's as well. But they'd eat breakfast together. They'd play games together. They'd do everything they wanted together. And one day he says, you know what, I'm going to ask her to marry me. So he asks her to marry him at lunch that day, or I'm sorry, at dinner that day. And so she says, yes, absolutely. So he's all excited. And so he goes to bed that day, gets up the next morning and goes, oh, man, I know I asked her to marry me, but I don't remember what she said. I'm so embarrassed. So they get up, you know, don't do breakfast that morning. So they're at lunch. And she's... He eats with her, and he goes, I am so sorry. He goes, I know I asked you to marry me, but I don't remember what you said. And she goes, oh, she goes, I'm so thankful. I knew I told somebody yes, but I couldn't remember who I said yes to. You know, so, you know, we have a tendency, you know, we have a tendency to forget. And so I don't want us to be that way. I don't want us to say, oh, I don't remember what my New Year's resolution is. So let's look at these things from Proverbs chapter 3, and we'll have these up on the screen. Verse 1 and 2. Good friend, Solomon says, don't forget all I've taught you. Take to heart my command. Oh, by the way, this is the Message. I know it's Peterson's version, but I love how he says what he says, in case you are looking at your version that you have and think, that's not what that says. Good friend, don't forget all I've taught you. Take to heart my commands. They'll help you live a long, long time, a long life lived full and well. And I don't know about you guys, but you know, I don't look at this long, long, long life. I'm just looking at 2017 right now. We're kind of looking at this moment, aren't we? And we're saying, I would like a long, long life. I would like a life lived full and well. And so what Solomon is saying is, hey, I can do that for you by letting you understand what God has in store for you. It's God's wisdom. It's God's instruction. It's God's knowledge that I want to impart to you. I mean, Solomon is the wisest guy who ever lived. And so paying attention to Solomon is a good thing. I mean, it's a good thing. And since we are finished, you know, we've just finished talking about each day. There's 31 chapters in Proverbs. We've been reading, you know, that particular day. I mean, if it's the first, we're chapter 1, chapter 2. I guess I should have started with Proverbs 1, but I like Proverbs 3 for this particular lesson because it just says so very much. But it's important for us to glean from God's wisdom. He says, don't forget God's teaching. Don't just remember them in your head. Deposit them in your heart. So let it change you. Let it be important to you. And I think if we'll pay attention to the following resolutions or the following commitments as found in Proverbs chapter 3, I think 2017 will be a successful year. So number one, resolution. Let's start with love and loyalty. Let's start with love and loyalty. You know, people do this all the time. Loser, you know, the big L. And we have a funny story about Curry that you have to ask her about that afterward. She had road rage one time and did the L. Even as a, how old is she? Five? Maybe five? Anyway. So we're going to change the loser, okay? So you remember love and loyalty, all right? Love and loyalty. That's what we're going to remember. Love and loyalty. Loyalty, faithfulness. So here's what he says, verse 3 and 4. Don't lose your grip. Don't lose your grip. I think of falling off a cliff and hanging on. Don't lose your grip on love and loyalty. Tie them around your neck. Carve their initials on your heart. Earn a reputation for living well in God's eyes and the eyes of the people. So our focus on 2017, as it should be every year of every day, is love and loyalty. You know, having faithfulness not only to God, but to one another. And having that love. You know, Jesus was asked, what's the greatest command? And you know, I'm going to preach it and say it 1,000 times because I think it's just so incredible that he's asked that question. And essentially he says, hey, let's start here. All right, let's start here. Where do you want to start? We'll start with loving the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and loving your neighbor as yourself. That's a good place to start. Solomon is basically saying the same thing. He's like, don't lose your grip on love. Love others, love God. Those things are important for us to do. Where we do life together, we're going to love together. We're going to care for each other because it's important. And we need to be faithful to one another and be loyal to one another. I think that's really, really important. Webster's definition, okay, when you look up the word faithful, I love definitions because it kind of spells out some main points. Definition of faithful is maintaining allegiance, constant. Here's the word loyal, showing a strong sense of responsibility, being conscientious and reliable, right? We need to be reliable to one another, need to be conscientious to one another, but we also need to do that for God. Love and faithfulness, here's what's cool to me, are both attributes of God. I mean, if you think about that, that he's saying to us, Solomon, this, hey, if you want to start out with something special, be loyal and be loving. Well, God is loyal and loving. Those are attributes of God. We often say fruits of the Spirit, right? That we have the Holy Spirit living within us and that we need to show the Spirit is alive and well in our life. Well, that's because the characteristics are love and loyalty. There's two of them. And we talk about kindness and gentleness and self-control and those things. But those are important. So we need to resolve to be loving and faithful. So number two, like start with love and loyalty. Number two is trust in the Lord. Trust in the Lord. I mean, it's not that hard. We talked about that in class this morning. We did a faith We did a faith fall with the two kids in class, you know, and they fell, and both of them, you know, got really nervous, and we were like, hey, we got you. We caught you. We talked about Abraham and how Abraham trusted God. There's a difference between believing and trusting, you know, putting everything into that trust. So verse 5 and 6 says, trust God from the bottom of your heart. Don't try to figure out everything on your own. Listen for God's voice in everything you do. Everywhere you go, He's the one who will keep you on track. I love how Peterson says that you need to listen to His voice and that you need to pay attention everywhere you go. There's an incredible story at the Paralympics. I don't know if you know that much about Paralympics, but it's where those who are either blind or deaf or missing a limb or more than one limb, they compete in these incredible events. And you just think to yourself, how in the world do they do that? Do you know they have a downhill skiing and downhill slalom snow skiing races for blind people? Not kidding. Is that not crazy? I mean, I mentioned that to one of my friends. I said, hey, did you hear this story? And they're like, what? No, I'm like, you're kidding. I'm like, no, I'm not kidding. What they do is they pair a sighted skier with a blind skier. And they try and keep them about the same height and about the same weight because they're going to literally follow in their footsteps. And until recently, just real recently, they would yell over their shoulder. The sighted skier would work with the person behind them who's blind, and they would scream at them, left, right, mogul, turn, sharp, brake, block. And they would go through this slalom course up to 60 miles an hour. Can you imagine skiing downhill 60 miles an hour blind? I mean, that's pretty scary stuff. I mean, I think some people that drive are blind sometimes, right? But at least I have the protection of my car, right? But you have this downhill skiing. And in 2014, a girl by the name of Kelly Gallagher and her coach, Charlotte Evans, they won the gold medal. They give the coach a gold medal as well. I think it's the only event that I know of where the coach actually gets a gold medal as well, because they have to ski it. But now they have the Bluetooth headsets and stuff, but they're saying, hey, do this, go left, go right, go, you know, and they have to follow. Obviously, they're blindly listening to the voice of their coach. And I look at this verse, and it's everywhere you go, everything that he says, listen to God, trust him, follow in his tracks. Is that not the most perfect scenario for us, to listen to God and listen to his voice only and to hear what he's saying to us? And then we'll be able to follow the track, follow the course, and finish, right? We want to finish. That's the goal, is to get that gold medal, right? To be with God someday. And I think that's just an incredible way of looking at it. It's such a wonderful parallel that we listen to his voice in everything that we do. Truly listen to God's voice. Number three, don't be wise in your own eyes. Kelly sent out, you know, Proverbs 27 on the 27th, and it talked a little bit about this. And it's, don't be wise in your own eyes. I mean, I think Solomon says it better than I can say it. He says, don't assume that you know it all. Run to God, run from evil. So run to God, run away from evil. Your body will glow with health. Your very bones will vibrate with life. It's a success formula. Trust God, right? Start with love and loyalty. Trust God and listen to what God is teaching us. And don't be wise in your own eyes. You're not more important than he is. Don't think you know more than he does. And so listen to his voice. That's about as much as I need to say. Number four, honor God with your wealth. Honor God with your wealth. It says, verse 9 and 10, honor God with everything you own. Give him the first and the best. Your barns will burst. Your wine vats will brim over. And as Kelly just said, I literally in my notes, I'm saying, you know, I don't think I've ever heard too many Church of Christ lessons on giving. You know, I think sometimes we watch TV evangelists or we watch certain people and they talk about giving all the time. And we're like, wow, that's all they talk about. Is that all they're interested in? And so I don't know why it is that we assume that that's not that big of a deal. And so it's like, well, I don't want to do a whole lesson on giving. But it's important because it's not a lesson that's taught by the church. It's not a lesson taught by people. It's a lesson taught by God. I mean, it's a command of God. There's lots and lots of scriptures. In fact, there's more scriptures on giving than there is on prayer. And yet we hear lots of lessons on prayer. I know I've already preached at least four, you know, about how important it is to pray. So why don't we talk about the importance of giving? Because I think oftentimes we say, you know, I as a minister, you know, who gets a paycheck as a result of some of your giving, it almost sounds like, hey, give more money to me, right? It's not about me. It's about giving to God, because God understands, going back to number three, that we'll be wise in our own eyes when we start relying on ourselves and we rely on our own resources and we think, hey, it's all about us. And so we need to be givers. Look at Malachi chapter 3. I think this advice seems to flow well with what Malachi said to the Israelites in verses 8 through 10. He asks the question, will a mere mortal rob God? Yet God says, you rob me. You ask, how are we robbing you? In tithes and offerings, God replies. You're under a curse, your whole nation, because you're robbing me. So then he says in verse 10, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be room enough to store it. I love how God says, hey, you want to test me? Test me. See if I can't throw some floodgates open. I'll give you blessing. Now here's the question that we often have to ask is God saying, if I give you $100, you're going to give me $1,000? Because sometimes you hear that. You know, you hear this prosperity gospel where, oh, you need to give more money and then you'll get more money. He's not talking about just money. He's talking about blessing. He's talking about making it rain for their crops and having their animals produce and all of the successes there, you know, that helps their economy in so many different ways. But it's really about leaning on him. And sometimes we say, well, Mike, you know, yeah, I've already got a budget. I can't give more. Well, then go back to number two, trust in the Lord. You know, if you worry about your giving and you worry about, you know, you being in charge of your own budget, God has a way of evening things out. And I think God is really good about knowing our hearts and knowing what it is that's important to us. And when we give part of what we have that he's already given to us, it not only helps us rely on him, but it gives him a big smile on his face. He doesn't need it, right? I mean, God's got everything. We often say, what do you buy a man who has everything? Well, what do you buy a God who has everything? You know, can you buy him something? Can you give him something? Is there something special that you got for Christmas that money couldn't buy? You know, we talk about that all the time. Having somebody close, having family, isn't that a present? I mean, I know I've done a lesson before on presence versus presence, you know, N-C-E versus T-S, you know, the presence of people that you care about. That's pretty important, isn't it? So God says, I want you to get closer to me as I will get closer to you. And you say, well, giving doesn't do that. I think it does. I think it's a trusting thing that we do with God. That we say, you know what? God, I'm going to give you my time. I'm going to sacrifice what's important to me. It doesn't always have to be monetary things. It can be something else. We've oftentimes said, well, I sacrificed a lot. You know, I cleaned my closet out and I wiped out all this stuff that I had and I gave it to the poor. And I told the kids one time, we had a fundraiser or clothes raising, I don't know what you'd call that, just activity. And it's like, you know, well, I sacrificed quite a bit. It's like, well, I'll tell you what a sacrifice would be. Curry gave me this for Christmas, right? A sacrifice would be for me to give this because I really like it, right? And Jim really likes it because Jim was like, oh, well, I think I'm going to go get me one of those too. Or you already have one, right? You said you already had one. So oftentimes we give, but it's leftovers. And when they're the leftovers, it doesn't mean as much, even to us. But when we give something that really means a lot to us, I think that is the heart of true giving and what it means to truly sacrifice. And so I think what he's saying is honor God with everything you own. Give him the first and give him the best. And that includes our time, and that includes our energy, and that definitely includes our hearts. You know, we don't give him the leftovers. Number five, don't despise the Lord's discipline. Don't despise the Lord's discipline. Proverbs 3:11-12. But don't, dear friend, resent God's discipline. Don't sulk under his loving correction. It's the child he loves that God corrects. A father's delight is behind all this. You know, we oftentimes forget what love is in relationship. You know, Kelly, again, in Genesis, talking about a loving father, or God the Father, you know, disciplining his children and how important that is. You know, that we're teaching them love, that we're teaching them respect toward God. That's important. If you turn with me to Hebrews chapter 12, it'll be on the screen as well, verses 9 through 11. This particular proverb, Proverbs 3, and these verses are actually quoted by the writer of Hebrews when he's talking about the importance of discipline and how important that is. And it was extremely important to this letter written to the Hebrews, right? Because they're under a great persecution. And some of them are saying, wow, things just aren't going our way. You know, things aren't going the way we expect them to be going. I mean, we become Christians. You know, this is a bunch of Jews who become Christians. And all of a sudden they go, wow, we're facing some persecution. Now we're facing some tough times. And so these Jews are thinking, I'm going to go back to Judaism. I'm not going to continue to be a Christian. I'm going to go back to Judaism. That's what the book of Hebrews is basically written about. And so they're like, hey, we're going through some tough times here. You know, we thought we'd become a Christian and everything's going to be great, but we're experiencing persecution and we're experiencing getting kicked out of the synagogue and arguing and losing jobs, and all of these things are taking place because the Jewish culture sees the Christians as the bad guys and saw Jesus as the rebellious one, as the one who was killed for a reason. And some became Christians and some refused to. But anyway, he says here, verses 9 through 11, moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of spirits and live? They, talking about our human fathers, disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace. And I love this part, for those who have been trained by it. That's what discipline does. It trains us. It teaches us. And so don't despise the Lord's discipline when something happens in your life and you go, why is this happening to me? Right? Why is that happening to me? It could be that God is just simply disciplining us, that he's teaching us, he's training us for the next chapter, something else that might be coming up. Discipline often teaches us what we can't learn on our own. Tom Landry, great coach, Dallas Cowboy coach forever and ever and ever. He's considered one of the greatest coaches of all time. He was also a man of faith. He said this, the job of a football coach is to make men do what they don't want to do in order to achieve what they've always wanted to be. I think he had a good grasp. I think that's because as a man of faith, he recognized God's discipline in his life and the importance of that discipline. So don't despise the discipline of the Lord. Number six, search for wisdom. Search for wisdom. Now, my definition of wisdom, I'm pretty sure my kids could probably say it, but I won't put them on the spot. Right? Try them? No? Definition of wisdom? Thank you. Good job, Curry Basket. Experience plus knowledge. Right? I mean, we can have all the knowledge in the world, but if we don't have any experience with it, we don't get a lot of wisdom from that. You know, I learn when I'm building stuff or I'm making stuff or you know, every time you do certain jobs or certain things. You know, I have a scar right here that taught me something one time, that you don't pull really hard on a cement form when you've got it leveraged with one stick because I leveraged on it and I pulled on it real hard and it goes, and it came back and hit me. And I have a scar to remember that. It's like, I will never do that again, right? Now, I could have read that in a book. Don't pull real hard on a cement form. You know, it might come back and snap at you. I'm like, yeah, whatever. But now the experience, I won't pull on a cement form ever again. It's important. One person wrote this. They said, wisdom is information plus know-how. We just went to Texas. And I was, as we were driving, you know, through Texas, I'm noticing some fields still have cotton in their fields. Some of them have already shredded their cotton, and you can see the leftovers. And some have already disc plowed it, and you can see one guy was out there planting. You know, he had his planter on the back, or seeder on the back of his tractor, and he's dropping the seeds in for his next crop. And I'm thinking, you know, here's three or four or five different farms, ranches, and they're all doing something different. Why? Well, some of them have different experience than others, and some of them are looking at their experience book, right? The Farmer's Almanac. You know, that's all these farmers getting together and throwing all their wisdom in there together. And so this farmer has to have a tractor, but the tractor's not the answer to everything because he has to have the right equipment to go with it. Number one, he has to have the right fuel to go in the tractor. He has to have the right kind of plow. He has to have the right kind of discs. He has to have, depending on what crop he's wanting to plant. That all kind of makes sense. Well, it all comes with wisdom because you've got to know when to plow. You've got to know how to use that, how not to use it. And all of those things all take place. But as these guys go to school, especially out in West Texas, they go to school, they get their degree maybe at Texas A&M. You know, it is agriculture and mechanical, or is it mechanical? And mechanics, that's right. I was saying mechanical, just didn't sound right. Agriculture and mechanics, right? They go to school and they get all this knowledge. And then they come and they tell the farmers how to farm, right? How's that work? How many of you guys got kids tell you how to do things, right? Front row. Thank you very much. All right? And we go, wait a minute. You know, let's talk about this a little bit more. Why? Because there's some experience involved. You know, been there, done that. So God is saying to us, search for wisdom. And he also says, as your father, I've been there and done that. In fact, I already know what's coming. And I have a lot of wisdom in relationship to things that you're going to experience in your life. So one characteristic or side of wisdom involves knowledge, learning, data, information, facts, and intellect. While the other side of wisdom deals with perception and judgment and discernment and insight and discretion. And in the biggie, just good old common sense, right? We learn that's that wisdom. So look what he says, verses 13 and following. He says, you're blessed when you meet Lady Wisdom, when you make friends with Madam Insight. She's worth far more than money in the bank. Her friendship is better than a big salary. Her value exceeds all the trappings of wealth. Nothing you could wish for holds a candle to her. With one hand, she gives long life. With the other, she confers recognition. Her manner is beautiful. Her life wonderfully complete. She's the very tree of life to those who embrace her. Hold her tight and be blessed. So when we see insight, when we see wisdom, we need to hold on. We need to search for that wisdom. How do you do that? Well, you search the Word. You know, a New Year's resolution, what greater New Year's resolution could there be other than taking up the challenge that was kind of put out there by Kelly and Rhonda? They're going to go through their daily Bible. You know, get a daily Bible, right? You even gave that link if you've got that in your email. And follow that. Just get in the Word every day and glean from God's wisdom. And then number seven, do not fear. Do not fear. We'll conclude with this one. I could have had a few more, but for time's sake, I chose seven. Seven's a good number. Verse 25 and 26. You'll take afternoon naps without a worry. It's a good thing. Afternoon naps are a good thing. You'll enjoy a good night's sleep. No need to panic over alarms or surprises or prediction that doomsday's just around the corner, because God will be right there with you. He'll keep you safe and sound. That's part of that wisdom that we search for. When we recognize God in all the things that we do and all the things that we say, and we can see His hand in our life, it makes us sleep better because we know God is with us. He's our refuge. He's our fortress. Those things are important. I love this quote. Unknown writes a lot of really good quotes. I've noticed that in my life. I don't know who Unknown is, but they're really, really good. But sometimes the Lord calms a storm. Sometimes He lets the storm rage and calms His child. I love that. I think that's very valuable. I think what God doesn't take all of the world away from us, but He leaves us in this world and at times says, you know what, don't worry about it. I'll take care of you. You know, that's where that trust comes in. That's where that wisdom comes in. We need to talk more with our children and our teens about this too, because this was interesting to me. Researchers at Johns Hopkins University reported about 45 years ago the greatest fears of grade school children. The greatest fears of grade school children were animals, being in a dark room, high places, strangers, and loud noises. I didn't keep up. Isn't that crazy? 45 years ago, the top five things that kids were afraid of: being in a dark room, animals, high places, strangers, loud noises. This survey was done about 7-8 years ago. But 7-8 years ago, guess what the top five are? zombies. No, but nuclear war is there, which kind of has a little bit to do with that, right? It creates some kind of zombieism. Number one is divorce, nuclear war, cancer, pollution, and getting mugged. What? You know, in 45 years, we go from animals to, you know, human animals, right? Mugging us and pollution and divorce. I mean, that's kind of sad to me that there's so much fear among, this is first through fifth graders, that that's their big worries now. And that shouldn't be a case for them. So a lot of those things aren't going to happen either, or some of those things are going to be alleviated by understanding who God is. So start with love and faithfulness. Trust in the Lord. Don't be wise in your own eyes. Honor God with your wealth. Don't despise the Lord's discipline. Search for wisdom and trust in the Lord. Do not fear.